Imagine this scenario. You are a second-year resident doing a shift in the emergency department. A 68-year-old man is brought in by ambulance in full cardiac arrest. The initial cardiogram performed by the paramedics shows an acute anterior wall myocardial infarction. On presentation, he is unresponsive and pulseless, and there is no blood pressure. After continued cardiopulmonary resuscitation and two attempts at cardioconversion, his carotid pulse is palpable and the monitor shows return on normal sinus rhythm, but the patient never regains consciousness from this event. What's responsible for this patient's altered level of consciousness? And how does his condition affect his brain's ability to get oxygen and nutrients? And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Yoon Weisholtz, bringing neurology from our bricks to your ears. After listening to today's episode, you'll be able to 1. Describe the major pathways for energy metabolism in the brain and explain the role of astrocytes in these pathways. 2. Describe the role and regulation of glycogen in brain metabolism. 3. Explain the mechanism and function of the lactate shuttle. And 4. Describe how metabolism is altered in pathological conditions, including hypoxia, ischemia, hypoglycemia, and depression. Part 1. How does the brain generate its energy? For the most part, the brain relies on glucose as its main energy source. In fact, we see the brain preferentially uses glucose. In times of low glucose levels, such as fasting or starvation, the brain can use ketones, lactate, and amino acids. It's worth noting here that the brain does not use fatty acids to generate energy. So think back to that last packet of M&M candies you were munching on. We're going to explore today how your consumption of foods gets converted to glucose and energy used by your brain. After you chow down on M&Ms, your body converts foods into glucose. And how does glucose actually get inside the brain? Well, circulating glucose molecules are recruited into neurons via GLUT transporters, specifically GLUT3 on neuronal cell membranes. Neuronal hexokinase phosphorylates the glucose to form glucose-6-phosphate. This phosphorylation prevents the glucose molecules from leaving the cell. The inward glucose gradient is maintained, and the molecule is committed to an energy-producing pathway. Glucose-6-phosphate can be processed via a handful of pathways in the brain, including glycolysis, the pentose phosphate pathway, and glycogenesis. The first two of these pathways occur in the neurons. Glycogenesis only happens in the brain cells called astrocytes. Now let's stop here to do a quick pop quiz before we continue. Through which transporter does glucose enter neurons? And you're correct if you said the GLUT3 transporter. Glycolysis is a biochemical process that allows neurons to take glucose-6-phosphate and convert it to adenosine triphosphate, or ATP. Although glycolysis itself only generates a net amount of 2 ATP molecules, it also creates pyruvate. On finishing glycolysis and entering the mitochondria, pyruvate participates in the citric acid cycle, also referred to as the TCA or Krebs cycle, to create energy shuttling intermediates that flow down the electron transport chain. From here, the electron transport chain produces a proton gradient, which can generate 30 to 34 ATP per the one original glucose molecule. Now that's a lot more bang for your glucose buck. Another biochemical pathway that generates some energy is the pentose phosphate pathway, or PPP. The amount is relatively little compared to the previously mentioned pathways. Nevertheless, the pentose phosphate pathway is important for brain metabolism because it generates NADPH. This molecule plays a vital role in the creation of more complex molecules through anabolic processes. Now, NADPH in the enzyme glutathione reductase convert oxidized glutathione to reduced glutathione. Reactive oxygen species and other oxidized substances are neutralized by reduced glutathione, which keeps them from damaging the brain. And remember that astrocytes are the brain cells that take up glucose. Astrocytes can perform glycogenesis, the generation of glycogen, which is a storage form of glucose. Although neurons tend to use the most energy in the brain, they can't perform glycogenesis because they lack the enzyme glycogen synthase and thus do not store their own glucose. So neurons can't perform glycogenesis and glycogenolysis, so they rely on astrocytes to store and liberate glucose as is needed. This metabolic arrangement is known as metabolic coupling. Glycogen can be directly broken down into units of glucose-6-phosphate. The glucose-6-phosphate remains within the astrocyte, entering glycolysis to eventually become lactate. Lactate is transported into the extracellular space, taken up by neurons, and transformed into pyruvate. Pyruvate goes down the citric acid cycle, an electron transport chain, to produce energy. That's a lot, so let's stop to review here. What important molecule is generated by the pentose phosphate pathway for brain metabolism? That's right, it's NADPH. Part 2, more on glycogen in the brain. Glycogen's role in providing fuel to astrocytes and neurons, the latter via its lactate byproduct, makes it a vital contributor to brain metabolism. Glycogen's importance to brain metabolism comes from its ability to be broken down into glucose-6-phosphate, which readily feeds into glycolysis for ATP production. The rate-limiting enzyme of glycogenolysis is glycogen phosphorylase. This enzyme is induced by epinephrine, glucagon, and adenosine monophosphate, or AMP. It is inhibited by glucose-6-phosphate, insulin, and ATP. In simpler terms, low energy states promote its activity, and high energy states inhibit it. Glycogen phosphorylase does just what its name implies. It phosphorylates a terminal glucose molecule on glycogen. Phosphorylation interrupts the chain, causing the release of glucose-1-phosphate from the glycogen molecule. Glucose-1-phosphate is subsequently converted into glucose-6-phosphate by phosphoglucomutase, providing a direct entry point into glycolysis. This means that glycogenolysis feeds directly into glycolysis. And now here's the cool part. The brain has its own isozyme of glycogen phosphorylase. The glycogen phosphorylase in the brain is slightly different from the glycogen phosphorylase in the rest of the body. How it differs in structure and function from other glycogen phosphorylase isozymes remains a mystery, but the enzyme itself plays a key role in brain energy metabolism. Now let's test what you've just learned. What is the rate-limiting enzyme in glycogenolysis? And that would be glycogen phosphorylase. Part 3. What is the lactate shuttle? Earlier I mentioned the movement of lactate from astrocytes to neurons, but how does this actually happen? The answer is the lactate shuttle, the transporter that allows transfer of lactate from astrocytes into the extracellular space and then from the extracellular space into neurons. Think of this literally as a shuttle system with buses and an elaborate transportation line. The lactate shuttle comes from transport proteins known as monocarboxylate transporters, or MCTs. These proteins allow the astrocytes to release lactate into the extracellular space. They also allow neurons to take up the released lactate for energy production. Lactate has various functions in aerobic and anaerobic respiration. It travels from cell to cell, and even from organelle to organelle, aiding energy production, gene expression, and redox signaling, or signaling about the cell's oxidation status. Let's dig into a little deeper into lactate's role in gene expression and redox signaling. So what does lactate do for gene expression? It turns out lactate upregulates the genes of enzymes that ultimately oxidize the lactate itself. Among these are the catabolic mitochondrial enzymes, such as cytochrome C oxidase. In other words, lactate upregulates the machinery for its own use. What about redox signaling? Well, lactate's role there is a little less clear. Lactate is thought to somehow signal the relative oxidation state within the cell, specifically within the mitochondrion. Higher concentrations of lactate imply a higher oxidation state, given that it accompanies a higher amount of oxidized NAD+, while lower concentrations imply a lower oxidation state. The exact implications of redox signaling in the brain are not entirely understood, but they appear to have some bearing on the extent to which cells engage in certain metabolic processes. But before we move on, let's do a pop quiz. Name three functions of lactate in brain energy metabolism. Lactate aids in energy production, gene expression, and redox signaling. You've got it. Part 4. What happens to brain metabolism under stressful conditions? So far, we've been discussing normal brain metabolism, but it's equally important to consider how brain metabolism might be disrupted under stressful conditions. Conditions that produce significant alterations in brain metabolism include hypoxia and ischemia, hypoglycemia, and depression. Let's first begin with looking at brain metabolism during hypoxic and ischemic states. Hypoxia and ischemia can cause the brain to perform excessive anaerobic metabolism, leading to acidosis and neuronal cell death. And why does this occur? Well, hypoxia is a state of low oxygen concentration in the blood, and ischemia is a state of insufficient blood supply. Blood delivers oxygen throughout the body, so these two conditions are intimately linked. Decreased blood flow to the brain deprives it of oxygen, causing hypoxia. Hypoxia can also occur when the blood supply is sufficient, but the oxygen concentration in the blood is reduced. So how does metabolism change in the presence of these conditions? Well, without oxygen available, mitochondria cannot generate energy through aerobic respiration, aka through the citric acid cycle plus the electron transport chain. Instead, the cells have to rely on anaerobic respiration, or glycolysis, to perform the bulk of energy generation. Continuing glycolysis requires that oxidized NAD+ is regenerated to absorb the protons released during glycolysis. This is done through conversion of pyruvate into lactate. If you recall, we earlier discussed the three important functions of lactate, which are energy production, gene expression, and redox signaling. But it is also acidic. Brain acidification by lactate can irreversibly damage surrounding neurons, leading to eventual necrosis. The symptoms of this damage can vary drastically based on the affected regions. In terms of anatomy, it's important to note that the areas of the brain most vulnerable to ischemia and hypoxia include the hippocampus, neocortex, cerebellum, and the watershed areas, which are the border zones between two vascular territories. Let's compare hypoxia and ischemia to the state of hypoglycemia, where not enough glucose is available. Without sufficient glucose, which is the brain's preferred energy source, the brain cannot perform many of the metabolic functions discussed to this point. Hypoglycemia is a feared complication among patients with diabetes treated with insulin. The metabolic response in a brain deprived of glucose is multifaceted and not fully understood. Some neurons seem to respond by using alternative fuel resources, predominantly acids like lactate and ketone bodies. Other neurons decrease their firing rate to decrease glucose use. Decreased neuronal activity has several manifestations. They vary based on severity and patient age, and symptoms can include seizures, altered cognition, and even loss of consciousness. Finally, how does brain metabolism change in depressive states? Recent studies have found a link between altered neuronal glucose metabolism and the pathogenesis of depression. The mechanisms for the metabolic alterations remain a mystery, but a connection has been established between decreased neuronal glucose metabolism and depression. This decreased glucose metabolism seems to be focal, occurring most notably in the frontal cortex of patients with depression. Now, let's do one last review question before we finish up. Which areas of the brain are most vulnerable to hypoxia and ischemia? That would be the hippocampus, neocortex, cerebellum, and watershed areas. And that's all I have today on brain energy metabolism. I hope that I didn't use too much of your brain glucose. Now let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode today. First, can you list and describe the major pathways for brain energy metabolism? The metabolic processes of the brain are heavily reliant on glucose. The brain is reliant on a handful of metabolic processes, especially glycolysis and glycogenesis. Astrocytes can store glycogen, a branch compound formed from many glucose monomers, but neurons cannot store glycogen. Glycogenolysis of stored glycogen by astrocytes provides the source of energy for surrounding neurons in the form of lactate. Next, can you explain the function of the lactate shuttle in providing energy to neurons? The lactate shuttle allows the transfer of lactate from astrocytes into the extracellular space and then from the extracellular space into neurons. The lactate shuttle is mediated by the monocarboxylate transporters, which are expressed by both astrocytes and neurons. Finally, can you describe how brain metabolism changes in hypoxia, ischemia, hypoglycemia, and depression? Hypoxia and ischemia can cause the brain to perform excessive anaerobic metabolism, leading to acidosis and neuronal cell death. Hypoglycemia, a deprivation of glucose, causes neurons to use alternative fuel sources and decrease neuronal activity. Depression is characterized by decreased glucose metabolism in certain regions of the brain, namely the frontal lobe. Armed with your newfound knowledge on the metabolic needs of the brain, let's revisit our patient from the beginning of today's episode. You are a second-year resident doing a shift in the emergency department when a 68-year-old man is brought in by ambulance in full cardiac arrest. He is unresponsive and pulseless, and there is no blood pressure. After continued CPR and two attempts at cardioconversion, his carotid pulse is palpable and the monitor shows return on normal sinus rhythm, but the patient never regains consciousness from this event. What is responsible for this patient's altered level of consciousness? How does his condition affect his brain's ability to get oxygen and nutrients? In this patient's case, his cardiac arrest has significantly decreased adequate blood flow to his brain and thus decreased his oxygen and glucose levels to his neurons. Our brain depends on adequate blood flow and oxygen levels for optimal function. When these processes are impaired, such as with cerebral artery occlusion or profound hypotension, the metabolism of the brain shifts from aerobic to anaerobic metabolism, which leads to acidosis. The acidosis is due to excess production of lactate from pyruvate, and this causes cell death. Sadly, in most cases, irreversible damage to brain cells follows. In this patient's case, it took too much time to reestablish blood flow and adequate oxygenation to the patient's brain, causing him to not regain consciousness. And that's our show for today. Make sure to like and subscribe. Your feedback continuously helps us to improve. You can get the full RxBricks experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, study questions, flashcards, and active learning. Happy studying, and see you next time.